All right. Okay, so this talk is in collaboration with, the work is in collaboration with Thierry Passot from the Observatoire de la Côte d'Azur in Nice. And I also want to acknowledge our colleague experimentalists who are Neil Mendelsohn, who's a professor of molecular and cellular biology at Arizona, Bashir Asali, who's his former graduate student, and Kathy Ott, who was an undergraduate student working with us in the lab and on the modeling part. So this work is motivated by experiments, and I'll spend a little bit of time summarizing them for you first. And then I'll move on to the discussion of how to model bacterial colonies. And typically, this is done in terms of reaction diffusion equations, and we have a lot of experts in the room. But what I'd like to convince you of is that in this particular case here, you need to go a little further. And what we want to do is do some hydrodynamics. So I'll describe the model, and then you'll see that the hydrodynamic model we have is a generalization of those reaction diffusion models. And in some particular cases, it can also be reduced to what is known as reaction diffusion equations with chemotaxis. And then at the end, I'll show you some numerical simulations. So the model and its properties are discussed in a paper which recently appeared in Physical Review E, and the rest is more recent and more preliminary. So this is the kind of a sketch of the experimental setup. You have a petri dish, you have some agar in it, and then you inoculate the colony in the middle, and you let it grow. And you look at it from above. So that's what you see under a microscope. You see the agar here with the pores, and then you see the bacteria moving around. And the bacterium we use is Bacillus subtilis, which is about 2 to 3 microns in length. And its swimming speed is about 10 times the cell length, which is quite fast. Now, the way it moves is by a succession of runs and then tumbles. So during a tumble, it sort of rearranges itself and runs in another direction. And in all of the experiments here, you see that this is to simplify the what we put in the model. We don't have spores, we don't have surfactants or biofilm. Now, people have organized colony shapes in terms of phase diagrams. So you have two parameters here. This is the concentration of agar, or if you want in this direction, the wetness of the medium. So here, when the medium is wetter, the bacteria swim better. And in this direction, you have the initial concentration of nutrients in the system. And as you can see, there are regions where the colonies are sort of just round, and then others where the boundary is unstable and you have branches. Roughly speaking, you can sort of divide the region where you have branches into something that looks like that. So the right of the phase diagram is related to swimming of the bacteria. This is another done for another strain of Bacillus subtilis, and again you have the same division. They've checked that on that side, everything is due to mass increase, and in this side, swimming is important. So this is an experiment done by Kathy and Neil in the lab. What you're looking at is here we have the boundary of the colony, here you have the agar, and in here you have the bacteria. So if I stop the movie, what you see is that you have motion. And in this paper, they tried to characterize this motion and show that, in fact, it's a motion that consists of whirls and jets. So the bacteria swim in sort of a whirl-like shape, and then between two whirls, you have jets. So this is the phenomenon I'm interested in, and that's what we want to model. Now, the shaking is because Kathy is trying to replace the lid here, which initially was just a moist paper towel with a moist paper towel, but with formaldehyde. And what formaldehyde does is that it just kills the bacteria. And as you see, as soon as the bacteria die, motion is going to cease. So what this means, it means this is not due to any, so that's when she replaced the lid, the black things. And as you see, they just stop. Okay, so that means that this is not due to any convection or any physical thing due to the particular experimental setup is just due to the swimming of the bacteria. Okay, so let me briefly, but very briefly, summarize reaction diffusion models. So typically, if you want to describe the growth of bacterial colonies, what you do is that you write down the concentration for the bacteria, let's call this N, and you write down a reaction diffusion equation for this concentration, coupled to a reaction diffusion equation for the amount of nutrients in the system. So S is the density of nutrients. Now what you see here is that the bacteria grow because they eat the nutrients, and the nutrients are depleted because they're eaten by the bacteria, and both of them diffuse. A lot of work has been done and various models have been proposed. I took all of the pictures from a nice review by Ido Golding and Michel Ben-Jacob and co-workers. What I'd like you to remember from this is that you can come up with models that sort of describe the various shapes that you see in the system. And everything is in that review paper here. But one thing that is important is that if in the simplest reaction diffusion models, like this one here, where you just have nonlinear diffusion for the bacterial density and then the death term, or in this one here, where you have nonlinear diffusion plus a stochastic term, what you need in order to see branches is some sort of noise in the system. Otherwise, the colonies are going to grow in like round colonies. The other thing that people do is to include a term that describes chemotaxis. So I told you before that the bacteria move by a succession of runs and tumbles. You need to think of this in the presence of food, for instance, if the bacteria are chemotactic to food, you need to think of this as a bias random walk. So the length of the runs, which are in the direction of the food gradients, can be described as being augmented because the bacteria can sense that she's moving in the right direction. So in the end, what you do is that you have a global displacement towards the food gradient, which is modeled here by a flux in the reaction diffusion equation that is proportional to the gradient of the nutrients. All right, so now why do we want to go further? Well, because you see that those whirls and jets are not, of course, described by reaction diffusion equations. And so we want something that can model this. And because we have whirls and jets, well, this, at least to me, suggested a hydrodynamic approach. If you think of 2D turbulence, you remember that you have whirls and jets. It's like a thin film of soap, for instance. In terms of the model itself, you cannot just think of one bacterium swimming in water. You have to think of the bacteria and the water being together because you have a very high density of bacteria. These are a few of those of magnitude. Typically, when you start talking about turbulence, you think of Reynolds numbers. And if you define a Reynolds number which is based on the length of the bacterium and the speed at which a bacterium swims and then the viscosity of water, you get something which is very small. Now, if you look at this particular experiment that I showed you before, when you have vortices and jets, you can use different scales, especially the speed at which the fluid moves in a jet, and then you get a Reynolds number which is slightly higher. Still, in those experiments, you get large scale structures, which are of the order of a millimeter, and that increases again the Reynolds number. And if you you define a Reynolds number in terms of a ratio of the time, sort of the characteristic diffusion time to characteristic convection time, you can find things which are up to order 20.
How close are the bacteria, or what's the density?
It's very, I mean, they haven't really measured it, but typically, if you try to describe a single bacterium and then move in water, and then ask what is the closest distance, how close can it be to another bacterium before I can have to take into account interactions, it's about one third of the length of a bacterium. So here, if you remember the movie, they were all like close to each other, so they're closer than this one third distance. So they really, it's like a super mud or something like that.
This Reynolds number is not very in there.
This one here is not very significant, that's what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is that if you just look at this, you say, well, 10 to the minus 4 is too small. But if you look at that, then that becomes not negligible. Okay, so the point of this is to say, well, depending on how you calculate the Reynolds number and what kind of characteristic scales you take, you can find something which is reasonably large. So this is a little schematic of the experiment for the modeling part. So you have the Petri dish, you have the agar. The thickness is of the order of a few millimeters. And then you have the bacteria at the top moving in the agar. The region where you have the bacteria is a few micrometers. Okay? So this distance here is much larger than that distance. If you consider that the agar is a porous medium, then you can describe this with Brinkmann's equations, which is just Darcy's equation plus friction. And what this shows is that there is a characteristic length above which you don't have any motion. So later on, what we'll do is that we'll use this to average in the vertical direction and then turn a three-dimensional model into a two-dimensional model for what's happening on the surface or close to the surface of the system. So now, this is the model, so I want to write hydrodynamic equations for the bacteria and for the water, okay, and for the nutrients. So for the nutrients, you just take the regular diffusion equation. You could put some advection if you wanted to, but we decided that that was not crucial for the model, so it's not here. And so you have a reaction term, and then you have diffusion. For the bacteria, you write down a regular continuity equation that says that the bacteria here are advected at a velocity field, which is the velocity field of the bacterial fluid. So this is like a two-fluid dynamic approach. What you want to think is that a fluid made of bacteria and a fluid made of water, which are interpenetrating and interconnecting. And on the right here, I have a reaction term, which is due to the fact that the bacteria grow. So the normal continuity equation, this is not here. Now, if you want to rewrite this equation in a frame where instead of the velocity field of the bacteria, you take another velocity field, you pick up a correction here on the right-hand side, which is like a flux. And if you assume that Fick's law works, you can rewrite this flux as a diffusion term. Okay? So this gives you a way of turning a continuity equation into an advection diffusion equation. And if you have a reaction term here, you have your reaction diffusion equation. This has to be hydrodynamic at the level of a bacteria, right? So it's a, you know, in the same way as when you do hydrodynamic for a fluid particle, you assume that you have a lot of particles, a lot of molecules. Okay. So that's the same idea. It's hydrodynamic at the level of the bacteria. Okay. Same thing for the continuity equation for the water. So you have the reaction term. This is the velocity field of the water. And here you have another term which is due to capillary dispersivity. So what this means, it means that the agar is like, think of it as a sponge. If you put a sponge, a dry sponge on top of water, water is going to move through. So that's it's going to move through the sponge by capillarity. And that's what this term describes. We didn't put it in the equation for the bacteria because the bacteria are not going to be moving like this through the pores of the porous medium. Then you write down the continuity equations for the water. So this is the usual thing. Here you have the stress tensors, I mean the sum of all of the forces. And then you have two extra terms here that you may not be familiar with. And the way they only come from the right-hand sides of the continuity equations. Okay, so that's just the reason why these are not normally here is because typically, you don't have mass increase of any of the fluids. Let me say something here. You have a sum of forces that appear here. So these forces you can split out into three terms. You have to describe the interaction between the water and the bacteria, again at a hydrodynamic level. So it's, you can think of a blob of water and a blob of bacteria interacting together. You need to describe the interactions with the substrate and also some external forces, if you have any. Same thing for the bacteria. So this is the usual momentum equation, again with a term here that comes from the right-hand side of the continuity equation. And the sum of forces are the same as before. So you have the interaction between the water and the bacteria. You have the interaction of the substrate. And here we put an extra term, which is going to be important for the following. This is, if you want, our source of noise, which we describe as the small-scale contribution of the bacterial motion at the level of a bacterial, I mean, the level at which this model is written. So at the large scale of the hydrodynamics, I mean, the hydrodynamic scale for a collection of bacteria. And this is put in a sort of ad hoc fashion right now. We're just saying this is like a small-scale forcing at the level of this equation, which is due to bacterial activity. And if the bacteria were dead, this wouldn't be here, and then you wouldn't have any motion. All right, so you could stop here and then have your two continuity equations, your two momentum conservation equations. But the problem is that you have these forces that describe the interaction of the fluid with the bacteria, the water and the bacteria, and this is very hard to model. So what we said is that we assume that you have a sort of action-reaction principle, and then that they balance out. This is not obvious in two-phase fluid dynamics, because if you have a blob of, say, bacteria and a blob of water interacting together, you could have some of the forces that go into surface deformation, in which case here you wouldn't have zero, but you would have something that corresponds to surface terms. Now, you have to write the stress tensors. So as usual, you write down this as a diagonal part and then a strain-related part. Now, for the water, the pressure, this is an incompressible fluid, so the pressure is the usual pressure. And for the strain-related parts, we assume that we have a Newtonian fluid. So this is okay for the water, of course. It's not quite clear for the bacteria, and that's, again, an assumption. The other assumption we make is that when you write down the pressure term, typically you have the usual pressure term that corresponds to particles bumping into an imaginary wall. But if you have a large density of objects, then binary collisions may come into account. And then you can just write down a sort of virial expansion for the pressure. And what we'll do is that we're going to keep this term in here. Okay, so I'm going to write the pressure as the usual part that corresponds to just the usual gas pressure plus a correction that is proportional to n squared. Okay, so now I can put everything together. So you define a global quantity, which is the density of water plus the density of bacteria, a weighted average velocity field. And then you can rewrite the hydrodynamic equations into a continuity equation for rho plus a momentum conservation equation for this average velocity field. And to do this, I've made an assumption that the two velocity fields of the water and the bacteria are close to each other. If this is not the case for some reason, then you can change this closure relation. But this is the simplest thing we could think of, and we think it's reasonable. So here you have the model. You have one parameter here, delta, which is the ratio of the density of water to the total density of water plus bacteria, which we call the wetness coefficient. And as long as delta is constant, these equations are in closed form. So that's all you need to describe, say, what's happening inside a region where you have bacteria and water.
This is epsilon equal to zero?
This is the corrections here are order epsilon. And the forces that come in here, you have the friction that is due to the interaction with the substrate, so it's like Brinkmann's force. And then you have the small-scale forcing, and then some external forces if you want them. Now, typically, if I want to describe the boundary of a colony, it's clear that n is going to change near the boundary, so delta is not going to be constant. And in that case, you need one more equation to get a closed system. So delta is gone, and everything is described in terms of n, the density of bacteria, w, the density of water, plus the momentum conservation equation from before, and then the equation for the neutrinos. So we're almost there. Now, so that was three-dimensional. Now we want to reduce this to a two-dimensional model. So you need to integrate in the vertical direction. And in order to get, when you integrate something that you know, is not too complicated, what you have to assume is that the velocity field, you assume some sort of separation of variables so that it's a function of x, y, and t times a function of z, and you integrate over z in the vertical direction. And when you do that, with a particular profile given by Brinkmann's equations, you can convince yourself that here, when you integrate you average over the nonlinear term, the coefficient that comes in front of this is close to 1. It's not exactly 1, it varies a little bit, but it's really a small variation. So what we are going to do is to just replace it by 1. The last thing is that, and this is mainly for the numerical simulation of the model, is that you want to, you have two fluids, one which is incompressible, and then the bacterial fluid which is compressible. And you're sort of dealing with them together because we've taken this average velocity field, so we forgot about the separation between the two. However, we cannot, I mean, the velocity fields need to be such that one piece has a compressible part, which corresponds to the water part, and then the other should be incompressible. Oh, sorry, the other way around. So what we do is that we separate the terms that are going to create the incompressibility into an equation for a sort of compressible velocity field. And then we impose the incompressibility of the rest, which is the water part, by this projection here, which is a projection on a solenoidal field. So this is common if you just want to do regular hydrodynamics with periodic boundary conditions. This is, and you use a spectral code, this is typically what you do. You just put a projection here to ensure that the fields remains divergence-free. And so we have the divergence-free part plus this part here that comes from this correction here to the virial expansion. So that's the model. It's a little complicated, but remember that everything is average, so that's a two-dimensional model. Now, you see that if for some reason I can solve this equation on its own and have V as a function of N, W, and S, I can substitute it in here. So if you forget about this here and then just assume that V is a function of the rest, you have reaction, diffusion, advection equations. So we're back to where we started from with the reaction diffusion equations model, except that now the V is given by this system here.
That's a closed equation.
That's closed, completely closed.
Closed equation.
Closed model. Oh, no, it's not closed for V because,
with force.
The forces are going to depend on N, W, and S, right? So it's not closed, but the whole thing is closed.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
It's not, on its own, it's not closed. But now I'm going to ask the question, what if we forget about everything else except this term here? And the reason why I ask that is to get an intuition of what this is doing. So let's assume we do this. And so I need to go back one step. Let's assume that here we just neglect diffusion for a moment. And then we take a typical reaction term that is like that. So it's a function of S proportional to the number of the density of bacteria and the constant. If you do this and you assume you have no diffusion, you can use the equation for the fluid to get N as a function of the time derivative of S, where G is the antiderivative of F, which is here. And if I just keep dV by dt equals that, and I substitute the expression for N that I have here into that equation, you get something like this. And if you assume you can switch the time and the spatial derivative, what this does, it gives you, integrate once in time, it gives you that V is proportional to the gradients of S. So what this does is sort of create some sort of chemotactic behavior, even though it's not chemotaxis here, it's just the fact that if you think of what this pressure term means, it just means that the bacteria want to go away from where it's crowded. And of course, where it's crowded, that's where there's no food. So it looks as if they were going towards the food. That's all that this is saying. But you can, depending on how you choose the F here, if you choose F equals S, you get back Keller and Siegel's model for chemotaxis. If you choose F equals 1 plus S squared, you get something that looks like the receptor law that people have used for chemotaxis. So if I use this expression for V and then plug that into the reaction diffusion equations I had before, now I have, again, a system of three equations, which is close because V is given as a function of S. And we can ask, well, what does this do? And so, well, yeah. You can find things that look very much like what was done before. So we used exactly the same parameters as one of the reaction diffusion models that were in the literature. And as you can see, we can reproduce all sorts of colony shapes. One thing that is important here is that normally you don't have water in those reaction diffusion models. Here, what's happening is that the bacteria, by growing, are pushing the water away and then creating a little front of water just at the outside of the colony. This is a comparison. You can ask, well, let's assume that we place ourselves in the conditions for which this chemotaxis approximation is not going to be so unreasonable, and let's simulate the full model. What you find, if you compare the shape of the velocity profile given by the chemotactic model to the shape of the velocity profile given by the numerical integration of the full model, at short times you get very good agreement. And at later times you get some sort of qualitative agreement. However, the error here as a function of time is increasing until it reaches about 60%. So in that sense, the chemotactic behavior is sort of the singular limit of the full hydrodynamic model. All right, now I want to show you some simulations of the full hydrodynamic model. So this is one example of a colony shape. And the next slide is an enlargement of this region here, where we have superimposed the velocity field. And what you see is that you can have those little whirls and jets going around, and that the noise which is due to this is destabilizing the boundary and creating the branches. Now, I'm going to show you an example of a phase diagram. So this is the preliminary part of the work. So it's fairly recent. And remember that this is roughly the shape of the phase diagram. So what we wanted to do is to take those functional forms in the equation for the momentum conservation equation, for instance, the small scale forcing, that sort of has this shape here similar to what we have there. Okay, so that's one choice of functional forms, and this is the phase diagram that comes out when you integrate the full model. And so everything is given. The only two parameters are the initial amount of water, the wetness of the system, of the medium, and then the initial amount of food. And as you can see, you get, you know, when it's dry or there's not much food, you get things that look more or less round. And then as you go in these regions here, you get some branches. I can show you one because I don't have much time. One simulation. It's just an animation of a few snapshots of the simulation. So this is the way the colony grows as a function of time. And you can see that it creates, you have some branches and then you have this irregular shape of the colony. And this is one quarter, this quarter here of the colony with the velocity field superimposed. So you can see that you have a lot of activity near the boundary. That's where all of the motion takes place. And then you have almost no speed in the middle. You can have interesting shapes. Let me just show that to you.
The color is the concentration?
Yeah, the color is the concentration of. So for instance, here you have a round sort of ring here, and then you have the bacteria creating patches in the inside. And you can see that this is due to the sort of inversion of the velocity field that starts. You see here that now you have a lot of activity inside, and you can correlate those regions where the the bacteria grow to regions where the velocity field is sort of taking them inwards. Okay, this is just to illustrate the role of this pressure coefficient, so that what creates the chemotactic-like behavior. If you the simulations I've showed you had a pressure coefficient of 10 to the minus 3. That's the coefficient that comes in front of n square. If you remove that, you put it extremely small, you lose the branches, you get some round colonies. And this is to show here that if you integrate those small colonies over larger times, you get really nice dendritic shaped structures. So to conclude, we have a hydrodynamic model that describes the dynamics of the colony at the boundary and also inside the boundary. What the model does is that it proposes a sort of general framework to describe reaction diffusion equations, which were in the literature before, based on this hydrodynamic approach. So it's just a generalization of what we had before. But on top of it, we can describe what's happening inside. The chemotactic-like approximation gives you the quadratic pressure term gives you a mechanism for having this collective motion that looks like chemotaxis, which is not regular sensing of fluid. We can reproduce the phase diagrams. If you have another bacterium than Bacillus subtilis, you just have to change the reaction terms and things like this. So you can easily adapt this to other things. And if you wanted, remember that I had a closure relation that said that the velocity field of the water was close to the velocity field of the bacteria. You could make this more precise with another closure relation. So what are the open questions that I see about this problem? Well, one is that we assume that the bacteria were a Newtonian fluid, which is probably not true. And it would be very nice to have some experimental results on that. As far as I know, nobody made any rheological measurements on the bacterial fluid. I heard someone said that it could be very difficult, but and other people say it was very easy, so I have no idea why, but I'm not an expert. The other important question is we had this ad hoc term that creates that describes the small-scale forcing due to the bacterial activity. Well, what we like to do next is to do some sort of kinetic theory to try to understand where such a term comes from when you go from a microscopic description of interacting particles to a macroscopic description where you have a velocity field. And the last thing, which is more mathematical, is to understand how the coupling between the hydrodynamic equations and the reaction diffusion equations create those instabilities that give rise to branching. And as far as I know, these are all open questions. So thank you for your attention.
We have time for some questions.
I have a short comment and related to the discussion that we had yesterday. I think this is a very nice demonstration because you had a very nice elaborated model that includes hydrodynamics and so on, and it's for experiment that was done in a particular way that is usually done in biology, namely that the bacteria swim. As you emphasize, we've seen the agar, we've seen the water. What we did 15 years ago, we decided to go a different route. You mentioned that if you integrate the third dimension and if you separate the scenes, then you simplify the model. Biologists didn't like it. So what we did is to develop a new strain of bacteria, which is Panibacillus dendritiformis, which is now defined in the catalog. And this strain of bacteria integrates for us the third dimension, removes the need for hydrodynamics, separate the length scales. How it does it, it's very simple. It grows on top of the agar, not within the agar. And in addition, in order to do it, it has the ability to withdraw fluid from the agar. And the nice thing about it, that he knows how to do nonlinear diffusion. He realized that nonlinear diffusion, if you have high enough exponent, gives you non-compact support type of front, which separates it, a very sharp kind of thing. So in contradiction to the intuition, you'd assume that they will draw a lot of fluid and make it a very low viscosity. but they do the right viscosity so the exponent will be high enough so they can form branches. Why? Because we expose them to very low level of nutrients. So the only way they could behave is to form branches with high density, because they have to collectively draw the fluid in order to move. So these are very different approaches, and if you do such approach, you can develop certain strain, then you can ask additional questions. And this not a remark about the talk, but what we had yesterday, some people were not here, because then you can ask different questions. Instead of talking with Mendelssohn, which I had a long experience, and trying to come up with more and more details about the specific type of way of doing experiments, you can ask additional questions. For example, why the bacterial colony growing on top of the agar and show collective behavior all of a sudden shows much higher resistance to antibiotic? And you can start to see, if you expose to antibiotic, how they change the pattern. You can even quantify the pattern and measure quantitatively the changes. Of course, the model doesn't show you exactly the pattern, though it gives you the features. And I believe that these are both should be done, but there are two different approach to the same problem and the question what you are after.
I had a simpler question, which was about this talk, which was which reaction diffusion model did you take? In other words, you took one that did branching in the absence of the hydrodynamics, and the hydrodynamics was providing some noise.
Yes.
So which one did you take, just for my own curiosity?
So this one here. Yeah, I guess I should have said that. This is a simulation where you have, you know, just a reaction term like this, okay?
Okay.
The NS and the minus and plus NS.
But you have a diffusion constant which is nonlinear.
We have a nonlinear diffusion
constant.
This one we have noise. We did exactly the same without noise. And as long as you have
Yeah, I don't think the noise is the issue, but you have the nonlinear diffusion constant.
Yes.
Is what makes. Okay, that was what I was asking.
And
okay.
This one here also has a nonlinear diffusion constant, which is given by this. We took the same functional form to sort of simplify.
Right, so I mean, the underlying question is, it's not the hydrodynamics that's causing the branching. The branching would be there if you just ran. If you just for some just said all, you know, so the hydrodynamics is somehow forcing the, you know, the branching by noise, and of course it's also giving you a description of what you didn't have before, which is the actual motion of the fluid.
I'm not convinced by this because let me go back to this slide, I believe. This model here.
Yeah.
If you reduce, so the way they. Kitsune Nizaki did in his simulation, he said he had an adaptative grid. Yeah. So by changing the grid, you were creating some noise. What we did is that we took a square grid and then reduced the size of the grid. And what you see is that what initially was like branches becomes round colonies as you refine the size of the mesh. So this is what made us conclude that the nonlinear diffusion term like this is not enough to create branching. And we're not the only ones to say this. I want to a conference where they had the same thing. So the problem is, numerically, it's a very difficult question because you can't, you know, there's always numerical noise. And in this particular case, I know that by reducing the size of the mesh, the instability goes away. What I don't know, and that's why I put that as an open question at the end, is exactly what is the exact mechanism for this to happen, and what creates those instabilities? And that's something I like to understand. And everything I've seen is mainly based on numerical simulations. And I think I like to have another answer to that, which is more.
Analysis. I thought Golding and Eschel, whatever, did a linear stability calculation with nonlinear diffusion and claimed there was a linear instability. Is that correct?
What kind of nonlinear term did you have? Because
with nonlinear diffusion, with the standard.